Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
The following is a Hoop Bowl presentation.
The second straight Hoop Ball Lakers podcast with a very special guest for your listening pleasure, none other than Mr. Harrison Fagan, Lakers beat writer, editor-in-chief, Lakers SBN, better known as Silver Screen and Roll, and also the host of Rewind and Reconsider, a little passion project we'll get into in just a few minutes. But first, we got to hear from the man himself, Harrison. Thanks for taking some time to join us today on the Hoop Ball Lakers podcast. How the hell are you, man?
No, I'm doing as well as anybody can be in 2020 as we're bracing for the second tidal wave of this pandemic. Just moved into a bigger place, so I have an office to podast from now.
Congratulations.
So yeah, thank you. I can't, I honestly, I have no complaints. I am blessed to be able to get to do the work I do. And, despite the shortest offseason in NBA history and NBA beat writer history, I am still excited to get back to it and just thankful that I get to do this work. So I hope you guys are good too.
All good here as usual, joined by our main man, JC. JC, how are things hanging down in the Midwest?
Doing pretty well.
Everything good? And out here in L.A., we're getting ready for the Lakers season to start. Now, Harrison, I always like when we have a guest on that we like to start with a little bit of a story here, a little bit of a backstory. So you are full-time covering the Lakers. You don't have any other side hustle, any other full-time job. This is full-time your thing?
Yeah, this is my full-time job. Other than doing the movie podcast with my wife is just kind of a fun side project for the two of us. The Lakers is my full-time thing. Only write and podcast at Silver Screen and Roll, at least on a paid basis. I do guest stuff and whatever. I am extremely fortunate to get to do that.
Now, I started my career off on the media side. I was working with Bleacher Report, which then became Turner Sports, and was with them for several years. Also worked for NBC Sports, so I've been on the NBA media side as well. Now just on the podcast side, I've taken my talents to education to channel my inner LeBron. So I ask you, Harrison, to share a little backstory with our listeners, because I know so many of them know who you are, definitely stoked like we are to have you on the show. How did you sort of get involved in this, and ultimately at what point did it become a full-time thing for you?
So that is a long story that I will try to keep as abbreviated as I can. I was a languishing psych major at Irvine Valley College in Southern California. And I just felt stuck. I really liked psychology, still interested in psychology. I think I finished probably 6 or 9 credits short of being able to get my minor in it, but just didn't want to do that. I ended up just kind of dropping out of school. I was dealing with some back pain. I was not passionate about my major. Once I got to research methods in psychology, I was maybe this is not for me anymore. I don't know how familiar either of you guys are with that class. But it is intense research, statistical analysis, all that stuff. I'd barely gotten through statistics and psychology. I was just, not passionate about it anymore. Dropped out of school, I was just reading a lot of Silver Screen and Roll, actually, and a lot of Lakers coverage in general. And so I ended up just applying to work there, started helping out with their daily news link, eventually just started writing more and more, switched my major, went back to school for communications, ended up working at the student paper while covering the Lakers and podcasting daily about them for Silver Screen and Roll. Was going through that, eventually went to Lakers Nation for a while, and then in, you know, and all of this was like contracting work and, you know, to varying degrees of pay and all that stuff, and then eventually got recruited to come back and run Silver Screen and Roll as a full-time site manager, and that was in 2019. So I was doing this from, I would say, 2013 to 2019 on like a freelance contracting basis until I finally, it was 2019. Yeah, it was 2019 when I got the full-time gig.
I know 2020 has felt like 10 years all combined into one, so I don't blame you for sort of, you know, getting the timeline.
Wait a second. But yes, it was 2019 when I got the full-time job.
You know, that's so great, man. And I always say to my students that, you know, opportunity, it's always present. And unless you put yourself out there, you never know what you're going to expect. I mean, similar for me, I just got my start in media by simply asking, hey, I read your site every day. You know, how can I contribute? Are there ever any opportunities, et cetera, while I was in my senior year of college? And, you know, lo and behold, that's how I found my way in. And ultimately, it's actually how I met the HoopBall founder, Aaron Brewski, as well. So if you're not afraid to put yourself out there, it's one of the greatest paths toward opportunity. And we're stoked that Harrison has been able to carve out this, I would say, better than niche. This is a real role. This is Harrison's got 40,000 Twitter followers. He's a man for Lakers news, memes, and all sorts of analysis, podcasts, and articles over at Lakers SBN Silver Screen and Roll. So Harrison, you brought up Lakers Nation, and you know we were fortunate to have Trevor Lane on the other day on our most recent episode of the HoopBall Lakers podcast, and we asked him the same question. I'm curious on your take, because as much as we could talk about education and mentorship and opportunities, I know our listeners are here for the Lakers. So Harrison, the most surprising and or enjoyable move of this A-plus Lakers offseason, but you can't pick Quinn Cook.
Okay, so first of all, actually, it was 2018. I went back and looked it up that I got the full-time gig. So I've actually been doing this full-time for 2 years, although it seems like 10 at this point, as you mentioned, with 2020. And then also just, you know, shout out to Trevor Lane, you know, like my former protege and at Silver Screen Roll. I made him. Like, don't let him tell you otherwise that he, like, worked for us and, like, did all of this stuff. Like, I brought Trevor in and I turned him into what he is. So, you know, I'm happy to see him thriving, too. In all seriousness, he is one of the best at this, and you know, I'm glad that you guys were able to have him on too. As far as like most surprising move of the Lakers offseason, I feel like there's only really one answer there, and it's LeBron's extension. Like I had no idea that was coming down the pipeline. I don't think that really anyone did, and I think anyone who says they knew is lying, unless their name is LeBron James or Rich Paul or Rob Pelinka, like, you know, or Jeannie Buss, or, you know, go through the command structure. But anyone on the outside, I don't think had any idea that this was even really an option or like on the table as something that was being considered. And like in retrospect, it makes sense. He's tacking on an extra year. It kind of lines up, you know, for when his son is potentially going to be coming into the league and all that. Like there's the over 38 rule that this makes financial sense. It's just LeBron, like, he does not sign extensions. This is not something he's ever done, and I don't think that anyone was really expecting that to change. But it really is, like, you know, when Rob Pelinka was asked what it meant, he just kept using the word trust over and over. And I think this really is an indication of the trust that LeBron has in the Lakers organization, that, you know, he can commit long term. He doesn't have to leverage his future over them to get them to make win now moves and kind of honor his talent and Anthony Davis's talent by putting, you know, win now pieces around them. Like they're going to do they both of these guys, I think, you know, they have other reasons for committing long term, but for LeBron especially, I think for someone who has always taken, okay, short term, keep the pressure on, this is really, you know, the contract version of a trust fall, and he is confident that the Lakers are going to catch him.
You know, very well said. In fact, and this is one of those things with the Lakers organization, if they sort of built themselves back up to where they're more familiar, and now they've got their two marquee stars, two of the top five players in the world currently, and Anthony Davis and LeBron James locked up for the long term. And I don't care what anybody says. You know, we always sit here and say, oh, fans care about this stuff more than the players. No, the players notice too. It sets a culture. It sets a certain level of expectations. And on the first day of Lakers practice, and this is a question for both of you guys, JC and Harrison, feel free to jump in. What is something that you're looking for this Lakers team right off the bat, right? I know it's hard to sort of have these expectations because the Lakers literally just won the title. They've upgraded the roster, although they have shifted away from an identity of last year's roster to this one. They've gotten younger. It seems like, you know, they they've allowed their roster to morph in such a way where they're not going to be necessarily predictable in the sense of they're running back the same team from last year. It's the first day of Lakers practice and what is going to be in a thoroughly expedited training camp and preseason before the regular season starts. So what are we really looking for here as the Lakers get back underway?
I think the biggest thing is they have to, as early as possible, establish some kind of identity, whether they're going to be a defensive-focused team or a team that's really hard to stop offensively. I think they've got the second unit that can be hard to stop offensively, but yeah, I think with Frank Vogel and how he established the defense last year, that's sort of the easiest thing, and the easiest sort of a crazy word to because everything's easier said than done, but yeah, I think too, to defense is based mostly on like effort and things like that, and so I think establishing a defensive identity is probably the easiest thing for them to do first and build on that.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear Frank and Rob talk the other day when they were, you know, made available to us because, you know, I think the expectation from all of us on the outside was like, okay, yeah, this, you know, like you said, this Ethan, like this team got younger and they also, you know, like they maybe shifted away from the defensive identity. That was not kind of the impression that Frank and Rob were trying to give off the other day. They were talking about how nasty and competitive all these guys are. And I actually do think that like Schroeder and Harrell at this point are like, it's, I think it's a little overrated how bad they are at defense because of the context that they were coming from, or maybe just like reputation or whatever it may be. Like, I think these guys have the tools and somewhat established ability to do certain things well on defense. And I think that Frank Vogel will utilize both of them and put them in positions to succeed most likely. And, you know, you have Marc Gasol who like, yeah, he's not what he once was, but he's still very clearly like an impact defender, smart defender, sort of in like, he almost reminds me of when the Lakers brought in Tyson Chandler 2 years ago and he ended up falling apart. But like when he first came in, he was just rejuvenated by winning culture. Despite being older, he still, you know, in the, a winning situation, knew where to go, knew what to do to like help impact a winning defense. And I think that Marc Gasol is like almost like a version of that with potentially more left in the tank. And so, yeah, like I think the biggest, as far as the biggest question for me left to be answered is like, can they actually prove this stuff that they're saying, right? That they're still going to focus on defense, that they're still going to show up to play every day. Like we all know the stats, shortest 72 day, I think, off season between when they won the title and when they're playing their first like real game again. It's literally exactly 2 months since they won the title when they'll be playing their first preseason game. Like, you know, we've all seen all this stuff. Will LeBron and AD show up to play every single game that they're out there? Like, I'm still a little dubious about that because I think that those guys, deservedly so, will need to load manage themselves even during games a little bit and try and keep a little bit in the tank for what they hope is going to be a long repeat playoff run. But, you know, Frank and Rob were talking about how the guys that they brought in will kind of carry that passion and that, you know, that extra hard work. But I don't want to take their word for it. I want to see it. Like, it's easy for everyone to say all the right things. Like, we all see all around the league, every single team got better. Every single young player has improved or added something to their game and added 25 pounds of muscle. And everyone's in the best shape of their life except for James Harden. And so, like, you know, they, you know, like, we all know what every team says during training camp. I'm curious to see, can they actually come out and do it when the games start counting against their regular season win-loss record?
I believe Michael Porter Jr. is also on that preseason all hype train list. Nothing against Michael Porter Jr., but as you said, best shape of their lives, Hall of Fame narrative is strong and popping. And I want to focus
and
on
look,
something.
And look, there's a real concern factor with MPJ there too. Is like when the NBA starts making the vaccine mandatory, like how long is he going to have to sit out, you know, in protest of that rule? Like, I think that is like a real question that the Nuggets are going to have to answer.
And so it's going to be curious, right? I mean, it's almost comparable to the school situation. But you made a good point earlier, and a connected point in that, you know, in the Lakers getting younger on their roster, you know, Rob Pelinka said, look, we don't want to be complacent, and we want to have some guys who are able to sort of not offload the responsibilities of LeBron James and Anthony Davis, but ask anybody on that Lakers team last year when neither of those guys was on the floor. They struggled, and in particular, the second unit struggled. So do you think, and again, question for both of you guys, that the Lakers' line of thinking in terms of getting younger and getting deeper was at least partially motivated by the expedited offseason, or do you think this is something that they had prioritized even going back to before winning the title?
It's probably a little bit of both, because, yeah, You know, I said last season, the first three quarters of every game, there should be no minutes where neither LeBron or AD are on the floor. Like at least one of them or both of them should be on the floor for as much as possible. And I think now you're in a situation where you don't necessarily need to rely on one of them to be on the floor for as the length of time. I think part of it was that. They're trying to develop a core around Anthony Davis, and so I think they're trying to figure out which players are also going to stay for the long haul to kind of, you know, have a core beyond LeBron and AD. You probably want to have four or five guys that you can rely on for the next few years, and that's probably where a lot of that is motivated from.
Yeah, I do. I was wondering about this myself, of like, would they have made these exact same moves if they had a normal amount of time in the offseason? Like, I don't know, but like you said, like, I think that, you know, lining, having guys that can carry forward with AD once LeBron either starts to age or leaves or however that goes, like, I think that was something that was probably going to be important to them regardless. Like, and so I think that, you know, I think that if these moves were available during like a longer offseason, like let's say they weren't going to start till March or something, like who knows, some point in the future, I still think they probably would have made similar moves because, like, it's just they're all on paper upgrades. Like they've, you know, everything that they've lost and Dwight and JaVale and the physicality at the rim, like, yeah, but they got Marc Gasol who can kind of replace that to a degree. You can maybe play Anthony Davis at the five a little bit more. Trez can definitely play the five in the regular season, you know, like effectively. And then, you know, you lost Danny Green, but you replaced Wesley Matthews, who like might honestly be better with this team, might end up being a better fit, we'll see, but is, you know, certainly a lot cheaper and allowed you to add other players of like more talent in Schroeder and, you know, Harrell that will upgrade your offense. So like I think that honestly they probably would have done this regardless, but I do think that it certainly helps during this type of lead up to the season and like the shortened time they have.
The Lakers were getting to the point where it was like the running Knicks joke of Harkless and a pick of who can we move out for this expiring contract and a pick with the Danny Green situation. So as surprising as it was to be able to flip the 28th pick in a very shallow draft and Danny Green for Dennis Schroeder, and obviously as surprising as LeBron's extension, not to mention Anthony Davis going for the full 5 years, granted the player option on the fifth year, I still sit here and I say, man, this Trez signing is surprising to me, because when the Dwight Howard news broke that he was quote-unquote coming back to the Lakers, and then it was invisible after 5 minutes, not even, I sat here and said one of two things happened. Either Dwight and the Lakers thought Dwight thought that he had an agreement with the Lakers, and or the Lakers got a call from a free agent that they didn't expect to be on, and then they sort of backed out of the Dwight deal and said, no, this is a soft deal. I don't think that the Lakers expected that they would be able to be in on Montrezl Harrell. Do you have a similar read on this situation?
Yeah, so on the Dwight stuff, like my sense with that from, you know, talking to people and just like viewing it and like knowing Dwight a little bit and like understanding, you know, like how free agency stuff goes down, like I think that, and you know, Haynes obviously had the report where the Lakers are claiming that like they never made like a firm offer to Dwight, and Dwight's admitted that he thinks that maybe he misunderstood. I still think that, you know, whatever they said to him, they clearly needed to be a little bit more explicit about what they were talking about and whatever. Like there were issues on both sides there. Now Dwight like probably should not have rushed to tweet the draft that he had ready about his return to the Lakers too. But I also think that like the Lakers, like that was not a great look for them, regardless of how it turned out or what led behind it. Like, you know, obviously they needed to be a little bit more explicit there, because that doesn't happen unless Dwight really feels like he's coming back, and that's kind of like disappointing and a little bit of a bad look for the franchise. But at the same time, I think part of that may stem, like, you know, the explanation there of like we needed to go to ownership, as if like Jeannie Buss is not kind of just signing off on like whatever Rob and, you know, president of basketball operations LeBron James are doing, is like kind of like that rang a little bit hollow to me, which does, you know, lend some credence, I think, to me, to your theory of, you know, they were talking with Rich Paul about KCP or something, and then he's like, oh yeah, by the way, Trez is like maybe available for the mid-level or has some interest in that. And they're like, oh wait, hold on a second, get Dwight's agent back on the phone. And so, like, you know, who knows what exactly was going on there or whatever, but it did kind of, you know, something smelled a little fishy about that. And I do think that, you know, if you had asked me like a week ago what was the most surprising move of the Lakers offseason, it definitely would have been Trez, because I didn't think that he was going to be available for that money or to even cross the hallways, given how much, you know, fans can say it's not a rivalry. It was clearly a rivalry between the two teams, to the point that, like, you know, you can tell which media members even are in the faction of one versus the other and whatever. So like, you know, I thought that that was surprising for a lot of reasons that he opted to jump ship. Again, in retrospect, given that he's saying that the Clippers didn't really want him, him coming here is kind of an FU to them, does kind of make sense. But in the moment, that was shocking.
Well, the Clippers wound up paying Serge Ibaka the same contract that Montrezl Harrell got. So I ask, I say, I would think that the Clippers are probably happy given that Serge Ibaka is a better fit for their roster for what they need. Would Serge Ibaka have been a better fit for the Lakers than Trez?
You know, I think that's an interesting question that we won't fully know the answer to before the season. If you had asked me, I'm going to do my best to be unbiased here. If you had asked me before free agency, who would I rather have for the Lakers roster, I would have said Ibaka because of the defensive stuff, because I think, like, identity-wise, given where he is established as a player, it just made more sense to me from an X's and O's perspective and, like, what the team would need, especially if Dwight and JaVale left. Like, you're honestly getting a better version of those players that can shoot through and, like, do more things for you on offense too, like, you know. So that would have been like, so I still feel kind of that way, but that said, getting more familiar with what Trez brings, like, I do think that there is at least a possibility that he ends up being a better fit than any of us would have anticipated beforehand. Because I just, like, look, I'll just be honest, I wasn't as familiar with his game before free agency as I was with Ibaka. Just, he's been around the league longer, seen him play a lot more times, you know. Like, I really enjoyed watching the Raptors last year. Like, I definitely watched the Clippers too, but Trez definitely struck me, especially during their playoff collapse, as, like, you know, a little bit one-dimensional. I just wonder how much of that was impacted by coronavirus, him grieving his grandma, who he was very clearly close to. I don't want to, like, guess at that stuff because I don't know, but watching his game and, like, reading the stats on him, I do think that he will be a cleaner fit here than maybe I would have anticipated before free agency. That said, I still, like, in a vacuum, I still think Ibaka would make more sense, but maybe Trez has a little bit more upside, if that makes sense.
Totally. JC?
Yeah, I mean, I like what it turned into. Like, the idea of Ibaka to be in a free agency would have been really interesting, but for the alternative of one player being Ibaka being now Marc Gasol and Trez, I think the Lakers end up getting the better end of the deal. And I agree with Harrison in that it's hard to really gauge Trez's impact on what his potential impact could be based on the bubble. Because, I mean, watching his highlights before the bubble, I know a lot of people are concerned about him clogging up the lane with Anthony Davis, but he, you know, just because he doesn't shoot three-pointers, but he doesn't exactly, you know, become a tree in the post. He's a really good isolation player from about 18 feet away from the basket.
He's got these weird little flip shots too, which I kind of like. I just love any player that takes, like, unconventional shots, and so I enjoy that part of it too.
Yeah, really good iso player. He can drive. He spaces the floor out. He just doesn't space the floor out all the way to the 3-point line, and so I think that's a misconception on Trez's game.
I absolutely think so. I think that it's a cleaner fit than maybe, especially with Schroeder in tow to run pick and rolls with him. And I also think, like, even if he's not a lob threat, he's a guy who has those nifty little weird finishers around the basket. Like, LeBron is going to, he's just coming into such a different situation here that it's hard to know exactly how it's going to work because we haven't seen them play together. But he does seem like the kind of guy that, like, especially given LeBron's, you know, history of kind of, you know, taking clutch guys under his wing and, like, turning them into the best version of the player that they can be. I do think that with Schroeder, with LeBron, he won Sixth Man of the Year last year playing with Lou Williams. And that's no disrespect to Lou Williams. They clearly had chemistry, whatever. Like, you know, but playing with LeBron is a whole different thing. And I think the type of player that LeBron and the threat of LeBron can turn him into might be even better than what he was last year and give the Lakers a dynamic that they didn't have, which is someone who can go get a bucket on their own. You know, even if they get a pass from LeBron, they can, they can create something too as that secondary attacker, which is something the Lakers didn't really have from their role guys last year, other than Kuzma occasionally.
If I sat here and asked you today what the Lakers center rotation looks like in terms of minutes, is your starter Marc Gasol, and how do the minutes shake out, including Anthony Davis's time at the five?
Oh, is that for me? I would say I would say Mark would be my starter. I've heard people make compelling arguments for Trez, and like, so I'm not totally against that. It's just if it were me, I'd kind of, my inclination would be to stick with the identity that got you there. And so honestly, like my starters personally would be, it would be Mark, it would be AD, it would be LeBron, it would be KCP, and it would be Caruso. But I think that it will more likely, my guess would be that it would be Matthews replacing Caruso, if Frank was going to go with that identity. But if they're going to go with, you know, kind of the much speculated starting line, like my prediction actually is that it's going to be Schroeder and KCP and LeBron, AD and Mark. But we will see. Although I have heard, like, there have been people that have said that Trez, you know, despite what he said about being willing to play any role, that he was somewhat told that he would maybe like get a starting role here. I believe Anthony Irwin has reported that he's heard that. So we'll see if he ends up starting. And it, like, to be clear, I'm really not against it. I just, like, my inclination, and I'm less bold than Frank Vogel, clearly, and less of a good basketball coach, obviously. But my inclination would be to stick with the big, big lineup that kind of works so well. But again, like, we'll see what he ends up going with.
That's kind of exactly where my head was at. Like, I envisioned my starting five backcourt to be KCP and Caruso, like, that started game six, because...
Yeah, like, why change it up? That just won you the title.
Yeah, it's a defensive-oriented starting lineup. Like, good luck scoring on that starting five, and then you have a fully offense-oriented backup unit in Trez,
yeah.
Schroeder, Kuzma, and then you can
stick
Matthews
in there. I love that idea of bringing Schroeder and Trez and Kuz off the bench. Like, I really feel like that gives you a fast, like, you know, attacking identity with that second unit that the Lakers just did not have anything close to last year.
Yeah, 100% agree.
Frank Vogel is a guy, you know, in basketball, really in all sports, you hear a lot about the coach when things are not going as well as they could, shall we say. And you hear a lot less about the coach when things are going really well, unless they are a star-studded Hall of Fame coach a la Phil Jackson. Frank Vogel technically was third in line for this Lakers job before last year. When Frank Vogel was hired...
He was in consideration to be the lead assistant.
Right, and when he was hired...
Like, at best, their third choice, at best. And like, I don't even think that it was there. Like, you heard more about Juwan Howard early on than you heard about Frank. Like, yeah, you know, I honestly think he was probably fourth or fifth.
And I believe, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe both T. Lou and Monty Williams were both offered five-year deals to coach this team.
No, I do not believe that is the case. I mean, maybe Monty Williams, I haven't heard as much about that, but Lou, I think, was upset that, like, his contract was only going to line up with LeBron. So I do not imagine that they were offering him a five-year deal.
Okay, so thank God. So you've got Frank Vogel signed on a three-year deal, is that correct?
I think it was 3 years. Yeah, I think it was the deal that Lou wouldn't accept. So I believe it was 3 years, which was the original, or it might have only been, no, it was three. It was three, because we'd be hearing more about, like, them negotiating an extension with him or something this season if it was only two. And, you know, like, he wanted in his first, it was three. Yeah.
This is a guy who in Indiana built himself up to be quite the coach with the Roy Hibbert. Yes, I said Roy Hibbert. Led Pacers and that identity.
No, look, people forget Roy Hibbert was a problem. Like,
he was a LeBron stopper.
Yeah.
He was good. And for whatever reason, his quick decline obviously was on full display. He even spent some time with the Lakers. And the thing is, after Frank Vogel went to Orlando, and I don't really know what happened, you know, things in terms of basketball, it appears that Orlando is the place where things go to die. You know, hopefully somebody saves Vucevic out of there before it's too late. But he was an afterthought. And now he's front and center of this Lakers team. Not only has he been able to coach LeBron James and get him to buy in, not only has he been able to coach Anthony Davis and get him to buy in, they have both publicly outspoken in their praise for him multiple times. I mean, can we give Frank Vogel a little love here?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I have given in my writing and podcasting Frank Vogel plenty of love, but like I can reiterate, like I honestly think that he is at worst a top five NBA coach right now. And I know that that is going to be something that like people get upset about and have certain feelings about, because they're like, he had LeBron and AD. How hard is that? Like, so, you know, you can like
it's
you
hard.
Have that viewpoint, but getting that roster to gel into, like, if you watch every game of that Lakers team last year from the first day, it was clear that they were on the same page defensively, and like that everyone knew their role. Everyone knew what was expected from them. And so, like, I just think the job that he did is incredible, like, beyond incredible.
There's no question. And I think for me, I sit here and I look at this, you know, obviously the entire Lakers coaching staff deserves credit. The whole organization deserves credit. But in particular, the way that Frank Vogel has been able to not only lead this team, but lead this team through true adversity. I mean, they were playing their best basketball at the time the season shut down. I was leaving Ralph's when Rudy Gobert tested positive for COVID-19 and not even shut the basketball world down, really shut the world down. That was a world event. And so to be able to come into the bubble, you know, look a little, I don't want to say rocky and oversell it, but to look less than great initially, get back on track, show people that after game one of the first game of the playoffs that they're here to play and they're focused and locked in on this mission. And every guy on that team bought into his role, whether it was Markieff Morris or even guys like Dion Waiters and J.R. Smith, who God knows how got playoff minutes. Even a guy like Talen Horton Tucker, a rookie, when he had his number called, he was ready to go. It speaks to a leadership on that team. And of course, LeBron and AD influenced that. But Frank Vogel, man, this is the best coach the Lakers never knew they were going to have.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. He was a guy that was happy to defer credit, happy to work with everyone on the team. Like, he understands that he is not their boss. Like, you know, like a head coach in the NBA, especially on a LeBron James team, like, you are not the boss. Like, you are a consultant, essentially. And you are a coworker at best of LeBron. And like you help them. And look, like, that doesn't mean he didn't hold LeBron accountable. He absolutely did. He held him accountable. He held Anthony Davis accountable. The entire locker room held each other accountable. And he also, I think, deserves a lot of credit for the way that he found roles for his assistant coaches, empowered them so that everyone felt like everyone from, you know, like the bottom assistant coach to the top of the player roster to the the 15th man on the bench. Like, every single person felt like they had a role in the success, felt like they had a voice in the locker room. And I just think that it's rare that he was able to strike that kind of kumbaya balance. And it's credit to him. And it's also a credit to the players for everyone coming together and, you know, just working together. I think every single person in that locker room deserves credit, but Vogel, like, right from the top of just setting that tone of, you know, we're all going to play for each other, where everyone gets to have a say. If we're doing, like, go out and I'm going to come up with a plan with my coaches and you guys are going to go out and try it. And if it doesn't work, I'm open to suggestions of, you can say, well, no, maybe we should hedge here, we should do this or whatever. Like, I will listen to that, and because you guys are out on the floor, you see things that I don't see, and we're all going to come to these conclusions together and vote on it. And once we make a final decision, everyone knows what they're supposed to do, from LeBron to THT coming in for 5 minutes.
Yeah, I think Vogel gets a lot of credit for building the coaching staff that he did, too, because a lot of people criticize the idea of having Jason Kidd be the lead assistant, and people speculated that by February, Jason Kidd would be after the head coaching job or have the head coaching job, and I think his role there was kind of, he's real familiar with LeBron, and so, yeah, you never heard any rumors of there being any kind of rift between Vogel and Jason Kidd or anything like that.
No, if anything, like, those two guys went to bat for each other constantly. Frank constantly talked about how valued Jason Kidd was and how, like, they were, you know, coming together. And in the rare interview, the only interviews Jason Kidd would grant last year, he was, like, he tried, mostly kept to himself. The only topic that he was willing to talk about was how good of a job Frank Vogel was doing. And, like, those two, I think some of that, look, like, some of that is Kidd trying to change his reputation as a, like, coup enthusiast. And so, like,
you don't think that he wants to be known as the human meme that's told to hit me so he could spill the soda all over the floor.
Yeah, look, like, he had that. He tried to overthrow his bosses in his last two stops. You know, like, he basically started leaking to the media that Giannis was crying when Jason Kidd got fired and wanted him to stay. And, like, all that. Like, there was just all this insane stuff that he got wrapped up in. And I think, you know, he was as motivated to change his reputation as anyone. But that said, that does not mean that he did not truly buy in and, like, you know, help with what the Lakers were doing. And I think he did. I think he helped. Lionel Hollins helped. Phil Handy was a huge asset. Like, all of those guys got big roles, and Frank Vogel, like, really seemed to prioritize adding just, like, large basketball brains to this staff and figuring all the rest of that stuff out later, and they were all able to come together. And I think that an underrated thing that Vogel did was really empower, especially the former player assistants, to have voice and be able to communicate things as a player, because he has very openly acknowledged, look, I have not played in the NBA. The highest level I think the highest level he played was, like, Division III basketball. Like, you know, he's clearly a smart guy, but he also knows that it's different when when you're actually going out and doing it. And, you know, I think that the mistake that some of these, you know, quote unquote smart guy, like video room coaches make when they come up the ranks without playing is like they don't have the communication ability and like the ability to understand that they did not play and respect that that is a different thing. And I think Vogel does not lack that at all. He's someone that's always empowered the former assistants on his staff and like that can, or former players, excuse me, on his staff. And I think that that's something that continued here and was a huge factor in their success last year, as was like the brilliance of those former assistants and, you know, the players for buying into all of it and working with him.
And I think that's, it goes to speak that the Lakers organizationally have been able to shift away from an identity of what was and now embracing the what is. And, you know, one of the things that recently came to my attention, and it's going to wind up being a question to you, Harrison, but one of the things that recently came to my attention is the way that Rob Pelinka spoke about Anthony Davis at the time the Lakers acquired him. And, you know, at the time it was seen as, oh, the Lakers are giving up a bounty to acquire Anthony Davis. Well, yes, you know, when you're acquiring a top five NBA talent, you should be giving up a bounty. Yeah. But in reality, it was well worth the price and then some, with a championship and a five-year extension in the bag, especially given, and I love Brandon Ingram. Love Brandon Ingram. But I'll pay Anthony Davis over $190 million for the next 5 years instead of Ingram $160 million for the next 5 years, gladly and with a big smile on my face if I'm the Lakers.
So yeah, look, I love Ingram. I loved his game when he was here. I thought that he had a lot of potential. I am enjoying watching Pelicans fans have to admit that he's good after they trashed him the entire time during those. Like, Ingram's great, but Anthony Davis is a top five player, like you said. Like, you know, you got to give up talent to get talent. That's just how it goes. Like, and like those guys were, the guys they gave up were good, but AD is transformative.
Exactly. He's a generational talent. And I think the term superstar is one of the most overused in the NBA, because if somebody like Jamal Murray, and look, I'm not trying to sit here and knock Jamal Murray, but if somebody like Jamal Murray is a superstar, then what is LeBron James? A super duper 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 star? Like, there is no term.
Yeah, like Jamal Murray's a superstar. Difference. Like, LeBron James is like a Jedi master or something. Like, right, like, right. You got to come up with a new term. Like,
exactly. Right. So when Rob Pelinka spoke about the acquisition, he said, look, I understand we're giving up good young talent and, you know, the chance at optionality, right? Future draft assets. He said, but Anthony Davis is in his prime. In fact, he was just entering his prime. He's just entering his prime right now. And so this is about the current and the future. And so the reason I bring this up is because, you know, you're somebody, Harrison, who, as a result of what you do, you have access to this team. And I always enjoy talking to people who have access to the team because they're able to get a certain level of access that obviously most fans or most people are not. So I appreciate good questions. So somebody who is regularly around the team, albeit via Zoom or whatever video modality it might be nowadays, what is something that you have sensed in sort of the last couple of years, whether it's something recently or something prior, that has just been different and more familiar with previous years of success? Does that question make sense?
So, like, I guess what, like, is the question, like what former tenets of their success, like, have they readopted, or like what has changed to make them more successful?
I think what has changed, if there is anything that they've readopted, then of course, but I think what has changed, and also in terms of Rob Pelinka being in the front office and sort of doing things his way instead of the Magic Johnson way, do you think that has had, I mean, clearly it's had a positive impact.
Yeah, what, I was going to say, I feel like we know the answer to that one. I don't think you need me.
Right. So what do you think it's done more for, like, the player culture, right? Because obviously we know that the talent has been upgraded and the results have been upgraded. But in terms of the player culture, what has it done for that? I mean, I know LeBron James is on the roster. I know Anthony Davis is on the roster. But not everybody, believe it or not, necessarily wants to just play with those guys. Maybe they want to play for something more. Wesley Matthews, I know his dad played for the organization, so there may be a biased personal connection there. But are there guys now that, you know, we couldn't get LaMarcus Aldridge to take a max contract a few years ago. So are there guys now who are just liking the Lakers lore a little bit more than previously?
Yeah, so there's a lot to get to there. I think, like, one of the it's interesting, the Wesley Matthews thing is obviously, like, a storybook tale on its surface, but, like, his dad wasn't really in his life, and so.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Like, he's admitted that. He's talked about that before. And, you know, he says that, like, what is, now their relationship is better, and his dad is actually apparently moving out to L.A. to kind of be closer to him and his family. But, like, you know, they were estranged for a long time, and, like, his dad wasn't around. But one of his favorite pictures of them is his dad on the court holding him, you know, when he was, like, you know, just a little kid. And, you know, Bill Oram of The Athletic did a great story where he talked to Wes Matthews Sr. about, like, you know, apparently Wes Matthews was born on a Laker game day, and, like, he can't, or, like, either right before, and, like, he was being held by Magic Johnson, Pat Riley, like all these people, all these legendary figures in the locker room, which is just like that's crazy to think, like, just to, like, imagine having baby photos of yourself, like, being held by Magic Johnson, Pat Riley. Like, that's awesome.
Surreal. And, yeah, totally.
Yeah, like, he was literally born a Laker, basically, and born to be a Laker, you know, when you look at it that way. But it is a little bit more complicated than that. But, like, that said, I think the history point is an interesting one, because, like, you'd think, okay, so, like, the storybook tale, again, on its face, is Magic Johnson comes back, leads the Lakers back to their glory years, and recruits this new star that he can empathize with and relate to and stuff. But honestly, I think that when Magic left, it created a void that allowed LeBron to feel like he could, you know, fully, you know, push out his cultural ideas of what an organization should be. And I think the Pelinka, as a former agent to the stars of, you know, Kobe, James Harden, like, all these guys go down the line, like, I think that he understood, even for role players and stuff, like, the types of things they want to hear as an agent, the types of organizations that they want to go to. And because of the lack of Magic, because of being able to work with LeBron and have that kind of partnership versus, like, you know, LeBron kind of, you know, feeling like he maybe needed to retreat to the background a little bit, somewhat passive aggressively, we should note, but allow Magic to kind of make his imprint where that's not really necessary anymore once that big personality is gone from the room and he's had a year to be a Laker, to kind of set his roots down. And I think that all of it factors in, but, you know, I think that LeBron is to some degree a culture onto himself, but I do think that Pelinka deserves credit for, you know, thinking about, okay, when I was an agent, and what did my players want? What did, you know, my role players want? What did my stars want? How can we make this the type of organization that they want to play for at every single level, and bring in the types of guys that stars want to play with, you know, consult with Anthony Davis and LeBron so that they're almost like team captains of what guys do they want to bring in, and sort of assemble a menu of options for everyone so that they can pick and we can have this kind of collaborative approach. And that's something that I think is very important to him, and also why you see LeBron and AD feel like they have enough ownership in this that they can commit long term, even when that has traditionally not been the clutch sports strategy.
How much weight does LeBron have on this roster?
Yes.
All of it?
Yeah, just all of it.
All of the weight.
I've heard him referred to, like, Eric Pincus, I think, has called him the president of basketball operations, essentially. And obviously, the Lakers cannot formalize that title, but that is my best understanding of how that, you know, works. Like, LeBron is not out here, like, making trade calls or whatever, but he certainly gets consulted on anything and everything before they do it, despite what him, you know, being able to have the deniability of saying, like, oh, yeah, no, that's a management choice.
He was on Uninterrupted, or the Road Tripping podcast, 2 days before Quinn Cook was re-signed, and he said, yeah, we might bring Quinn Cook back.
Yeah, but no, I'd love it if we gave Quinn Cook a look. And I like to imagine that he gave Rob Pelinka no other heads up than that. Like, Rob just listened to the Road Tripping podcast and was like, all right, I guess we're signing Quinn Cook.
Yeah, could you imagine?
Right. Rob just tuned in on Spectrum. He's like, oh, man, I better call Quinn's agent back. I guess we got to bring him back. Like, if my boss says so, like...
As the Lakers have sort of trimmed up this roster, it's the perfect time for me to talk about Manscaped. And to all the ball handlers out there, before you throw out your team's gear, make sure you take care of your below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped is here to sink the competition and deliver the best tools for your below-the-waist grooming experience. And that is why Manscaped has redesigned the electric trimmer. The Manscaped engineering team spent 18 months perfecting the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created and just released the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0. The Lawnmower 3.0 will do a little bit of everything for you, and it is simply the best modern hygiene tool for the modern man. So you want to head over to manscaped.com, get 20% off and free shipping with the code HOOPBALL20 at manscaped.com. 20% off free shipping, manscaped.com, only with the code HOOPBALL20. We got to mix in a little bit of everything on these shows, Harrison. So as we continue,
look, hey, shout out to outgoing Manscaped spokesman and new Sixer Danny Green. Like, you know, like he, you know, did the greatest Manscaped ad of all time in a Lakers uniform, and that, like, that may be like his lasting legacy here. And so, like, I always, like, you know, look, they created a memorable ad campaign with him, and you know, I will, that is what, that will be one of my ongoing Lakers memories of Danny Green.
Hey, man, I mean, at least it's a positive one and not him missing the shot to cost the title.
You know? So, that, I mean, that one too. But look, it didn't cost the title. It just delayed a title. That we got to reframe.
Right, right. And if it had resulted in a different outcome, he would have been on the first bus out of here, his choice.
Yeah,
or not.
I mean, he would have been probably cut rather than traded.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Okay, so LeBron has all the weight on this roster. As the Lakers move forward, I want to ask you about a couple things. One is, because they obviously just brought back Quinn Cook, the Lakers are now full on their roster. I mean, technically there's one spot open, but as Trevor told us, because the Lakers are hard capped, they really can't fill that spot until later in the season, and it becomes a prorated salary on the buyout market.
No, I take credit for that, because, again, I taught Trevor everything he knows. So, like,
I'm glad. I'm more than glad to give you all the credit. I'll make sure let Trevor know about that as well. And so I sit here and we ask him the same question. I want to ask, get your input. Because Quinn Cook is back, you know, you could definitely make the argument that the Lakers could have used another ball handler, which, you know, I guess Quinn Cook is. But are the Lakers short on the wing at all right now?
You know, that is a good question. That's something that I've been wondering about. Like, I think there's two answers to this. I think for the regular season, yes, I think they are a little bit. Like, obviously they don't have, other than Wes Matthews and, you know, like LeBron, but he's not probably going to do that like every game during the regular season. They don't have a guy to guard those bigger wings. But, like, how many bigger wings are you playing that you can't, you know, just kind of shade towards the big guys, like, you know, try and do your best, let them get some points, but, like, hopefully stop the other guys during the regular season. Like, there's Kawhi, like, you know, there's KD, depending on the form that he returns in. Like, I mean, there's a number of them where that will matter, but during the regular season, it's not a huge concern for me, just because I think they have enough other stuff where they can win enough games that they're going to be okay. And then during the playoffs, I think the answer is yes, because you have LeBron, you have AD, can even be that bigger wing stopper when you need him to be. He showed that in the finals before he kind of got his ankle injury. And then you have Wes Matthews, who's obviously like a tremendous in that role. So I think they're good. Alphonso McKinney even has some promise there and has shown that apparently during his time with the Cavs. I haven't gotten to look with him as closely, but from talking to people who covered the Cavs very closely and reading stuff about him, it sounds like he can at least bring that to some degree. And then, like, you have Talen Horton Tucker's a bigger body that you can throw out there if he's getting some minutes. Like, they have answers. And Kuz, I didn't even mention yet, like, you know, KCP can sometimes defend up depending on the size, but not really. So yeah, they're a little short there for the regular season, but during the playoffs, it's not a huge concern for me.
Yeah, Kuzma, I think, is that X factor that sort of relies in there, because he played a lot. He played some minutes at the four last season. They're plenty stocked up on fives and fours this season, so Kuzma shouldn't play any more minutes at the four. He'll probably spend most of his minutes at the three.
Said the other day that he sees himself as a three now. Like, yeah. I think mostly. And so that was interesting, and I think that is kind of where I see him too. Like, I originally was on the Kuz as a four train, but I think at this point we've seen he has more wing skills than he does big skills.
Yeah, so I think he'll play mostly three, and I think he's gets bigger twos. He's wiry and athletic enough to play to guard against twos.
Yeah.
So while we're talking about Kyle Kuzma, let's talk about Kyle Kuzma. Harrison, convince me that Kyle Kuzma is going to continue to be an effective defender and be a star in his role and not take the D'Angelo Russell approach of what's the best play for Kyle Kuzma every time he gets the ball on offense, because that's kind of where I'm at with him. And if you had to give him the same question as with Trevor, you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
All right. If you had to give him the same contract that the Clippers just gave Marcus Morris, 4 years, $64 million to keep him, is that an extension you're willing to sign him to right now?
No, that is not. I'm not there yet with Kuz. I mean, obviously there is a chance that that could be an underpay in a couple of years, like depending on how he develops. Like there's a chance. I will acknowledge that, even as not like the biggest Kuz believer. Like it's funny. Like my tone has shifted, but like my view hasn't really shifted on Kuz, but because of where the perception of his has shifted, like I think I was considered a Kuz pessimist a couple years ago when he was putting up big scoring numbers and whatever on bad teams. And like now I'm considered a Kuz optimist. My opinion on him really hasn't changed. It's just like the perception of him has swung from future all-star Mamba mentality winner, whatever, to like he averaged like six less points and all of a sudden he sucks. And so I think he has become a better player for winning basketball games now than he has. I do think that he has kind of a tough path to realizing that potential on this Lakers roster because of the additions that they've made. You know, with Markieff Morris coming back, with like, you know, a number of other additions, like the path to real playing time for him, and he seems to recognize this, is becoming a wing defender and like being able to do those winning things off of the bench. But look, this is a make or break year for him. He really has to like show or he's going to get benched. Like they have other options to provide that scoring, that ball handling, whatever. Like he really is going to have to step up as a wing defender. And like, you know, I don't know if I can convince you of those things that you want me to convince you of. I just don't think that like I would be lying if I convinced you of those things. But that said, you know, I thought that Kranjus McBasketball, Tim, you know, like Lakers Twitter, I think all knows him over at the B-Ball Index. He was on his Lakers Exceptionalism podcast. And, you know, he gave a stat that made my brain explode a little bit in that, like, so if you look at the Lakers in terms of how the B-Ball Index's stats define shot quality. So, like, if you looked at every single player on the Lakers last year, basically every single role player almost had an A in shot quality, which basically means they were taking good shots within the flow of the offense, open shots, like the types of shots that you would want those guys to take for the role they're slotted in, all of that stuff. LeBron and AD had an F in shot quality, but that doesn't mean that they're bad players. It just means that like they were taking difficult shots, which is what you would expect from those guys. Those are difficult shot makers, and those are the guys that like you want your superstars to some degree to be taking F shot quality, because that means they are the ones taking the bad shots that your offense has necessitated sometimes. The only other guy with an F on the Lakers roster is Kuz. And so that theoretically, like if he is slotted into a role that gets him the type of like not even A shots, like just get him C shots, and I all of a sudden think that we're seeing a much different player. And I think that Frank seems to recognize that, I think Kuz recognizes that, and I think that on this role, like on this team where you have a guy like Schroeder, you have a guy like Harrell that can go get their own buckets, you aren't going to be asking Kuz to do that as much, and you can get him going more as a secondary attacker, and maybe we start to see some kind of breakout of him. I heard that stat, and I've never been more optimistic about Kuz, just because it seems like there's literally almost no way he could go but up in terms of his utilization.
How many minutes per game do you think Kyle Kuzma plays when the Lakers start their season?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm going to say, like, I don't know, like 16, I think is probably about where he's at. Like, you know, just given, like, you know, how many other pieces they have. Like, playing time is going to be tough to come by.
JC?
Yeah, I was actually thinking right around 16 also. Yeah, there's so many minutes to – like, they're like, not
maybe
just going to do
– just because maybe he's, like, the full-time backup wing behind LeBron. Like, I don't know. Like, 20 is probably the most I can see, like, at least at the start.
Yeah, and like when we talk about that second unit, but it's not like the Lakers are going to do line changes like in hockey. Like when the second unit comes in, one of AD or LeBron is probably still going to be out there. And so it's not a full five people that are going to come in off the bench. And so that might leave Kuzma to come in later sometimes. And yeah, he may just have to kind of get used to maybe not starting to play until the second half of the second quarter, or maybe sometimes even not play in the first half.
I have a hard time believing that if Kyle Kuzma is going to play 16 minutes a game, that he's going to remain happy in that role and or maybe not even effective in that role. But if he's going to remain content, and I hope he does, I root for his success, of course, because ultimately it contributes to the Lakers' success as well. But if he's going to remain in that role, I think he's going to have a tough time getting the contract he thinks he's going to get next offseason, because I think Kyle Kuzma is looking for like close to $20 million a year here.
Yeah, I've heard similar. Is all I will say, because I don't want to like get into too specifics, but yeah, he is looking for a lot of money, I will say.
Yeah, he's in a tricky spot. I mean, he clearly loves LA and the LA lifestyle. I don't know if that kind of contract is going to get him that on this team in this city, but I mean, remains to be seen.
Yeah, just to clarify, I've not heard 20 million. Like, he's looking for a lot, I will say.
I also just think that there is not a team out there, especially not one that's going to tie up its cap space and restricted free agency without maybe a sign-in trade, that sits here today and says, you know what? We're a Kyle Kuzma away from really doing something here.
Yeah, like, I mean, that said, there are more teams with cap space next summer, and, like, we've seen how that can go, you know, like, where teams start, like, you know, they miss out on the stars, and those guys come off the market, and all of a sudden it's like, well, you know, we could pay $20 million to Kyle Kuzma or whatever, so, and the other thing is, too, like, while the Lakers do have him in restricted free agency, I do think that now that their cap space is tied up until at least 2023, reaching an extension with him makes sense, both if you believe in his upside and just so that you have a larger contract to make trades with, potentially. But, like, that is, again, like, that's getting a step ahead. Like, I think that you have to decide that you believe in him, which I very much think that the Lakers do. Again, like, financially, whether or not they believe in him is different, and whether or not they believe that he is worth whatever he wants, like, they have to find a middle ground on that. But like, I do think that extending him makes sense for both basketball reasons and like cap reasons, as well as like potential future trade reasons.
What is the extension that you are willing to put on the table for Kyle Kuzma?
Like, I think I'd offer him, I'm trying to think, like, I think I'd offer like, I'd offer at least 10, like 10 mil a year, I think.
How many years?
I don't know. To be honest, I'm not enough of a cap guy to even know how many years he's eligible for. I would assume probably 5, right? Like, I would not go 5. I think that I'd try to tie it towards when LeBron's contract comes up. Maybe like, you know, 3 years, $30 million, but he's probably looking for a lot more than that.
I have a hard time believing he's going to take the Jay Crowder deal, but yeah. I mean, we'll see. I think Kyle Kuzma, if he really truly embraces the potential for him to be the star in his role, continues to excel from the corner three, continues to embrace that defender that we saw in the bubble a little bit, I really think there will be teams that are more willing to pay him versus if he just remains that sort of offense-first player, kind of unclear role, unclear position, and a me-first kind of guy. I think he'll do a lot better by buying into his role.
Yeah, I know. I 100% agree. And I think that, like, my guess would be that he buys in just because he's competitive and you don't really have a choice. Like, if he sulks, like, he's just not going to play. And then, like, that's not good for anybody.
I'm going to go really dark side here. Can Talen Horton Tucker average more minutes than Kyle Kuzma?
No, I don't think so. I mean, barring like serious injuries or something, like, I don't think so. Like, I think that now they have like a lot of guard depth on this team, and I actually think that he got squeezed a little bit by free agency, but we'll see. Like, I think there will be nights where he plays now, just because, like, look, he's going to be a free agent next summer. You got to figure out what you have in him. But I think that it'll be more nights when, you know, LeBron or AD take the night off.
As we sort of sit here and discuss roster machinations, I'm really intrigued by a lineup that's LeBron, Matthews, KCP, Trez, and AD.
Yeah, me too. I mean, look, there are a lot of intriguing lineup combinations on this team. Like, I think there's a lot of interesting smaller lineups. I'm really interested to see the Kuz, AD and Trez backcourt. We have two guys with, like, the nicknames with the Z at the end. I'm gonna do that all year. And so, like, I'm very intrigued to see the AD-Trez matchup, both defensively and offensively. Like, how does that work? Because I think that it has a chance to allow both of them to help each other, but it also has a chance to just, like, everything's clogged up and it doesn't really work. So I'm very curious to see how that goes. And, you know, they obviously got to have shooting around them too.
Yeah, I think with this team, you know, basketball being where it is and what we're all kind of taught from a younger age, like, there's a lot of importance and you know, certain pedestal being placed upon when you're a starter. But I think with this team, it's going to come down to, like, closing lineups and who's going to play the most in the fourth quarter. So, I mean, who starts isn't really the most important thing on this particular team, I don't think.
Yeah, I 100% agree. There's so much talent that, like, you know, what matters is just what lineups end up getting the most run. Which, I mean, normally, like, I hesitate to say starting doesn't matter for that reason, because usually the starters get the most minutes together. But that said, there's so much talent on this team. All these guys are going to intermix. And we also saw, again, last season that don't overreact to lineups during the regular season. If there's one thing that Lakers fans need to learn from how last year went, it's like things are different in the playoffs. Frank has a quicker hook. He tries more things. He experiments. The regular season is gathering a sample size so that you can have gut feels of what's going to work against different kind of matchups during the postseason.
Is there any part of you that is surprised that Marc Gasol signed a straight 2-year deal?
Not really. I mean, I was honestly kind of surprised they were able to get him for that. But I think that, like, cap-wise and just for him, you know, financial security-wise, like, if he's going to take that little, at least give him 2 years. Like, I think that that's probably what enticed him to sign on there and, like, to, you know, pull the trigger on that.
I'm surprised he didn't want a player option on the second year, at least, on a straight 2-year deal. At the minimum,
I just don't know if there's like cap stuff with that like where it affects it, and you know, just maybe he wants to set himself up to live in LA. You know, I can't blame him. Pal's out here, he's got a new niece, you know, like he's got young kids, like it's a nice place to live. They can go, I mean, when things are normal, especially, but you know, even now his kids can go out, go to the beach. Like it's, you know, California is not a bad place to be.
No, not at all. That's the truth. As we're doing this show, we have some breaking football news, which is that Jalen Hurts is in at quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles. So I don't really have a stake in that game, but I think it's an interesting storyline nonetheless. And now we'll get back to the Lakers. As I look at this Lakers team, the one area of concern I do have, as the roster has sort of shifted its identity more toward an offensive, on paper at least, offensive identity, I think about rim protection, and I'm just wondering where it might come from. And if it's not going to be what it was, that's going to put an increased amount of pressure on the perimeter defensively. And so obviously bringing KCP back was big. Bringing in Wes Matthews, who I agree is a better player than Danny Green, really on both sides of the floor, and a better fit for this roster at this stage of his career. But are the Lakers, you know, should they be concerned? I know Alex Caruso can help out there. Obviously LeBron and AD too, but is that putting too much pressure on the perimeter defenders? And Markieff Morris coming back, do you think, where does he fit in as well as defensively? Because I thought that he was one of those guys who, after he came over, in particular in the bubble, he helped give this Lakers team an identity of being tough, where I think they really benefited from that. And especially as teams tried to sort of take the Pistons approach to the Bulls back in the day and beat up on the Lakers a little bit.
Yeah, so this kind of the Markieff thing kind of brings me to the other day we were talking to Frank, and he was talking about lineups and who's going to get minutes and all that stuff. And like, you know, it's always, you always have to read between the lines of what coaches are saying. Like I've learned, because all coaches praise every guy almost uniformly, whatever, like, and that's just kind of how it goes. But he was talking about center minutes and like, you know, front court minutes and matchups and pairings and whatever. And, you know, he talked about how Mark and Trez were both starting caliber players. And then he said something really interesting where he said, Anthony Davis and Markieff Morris is the front, and then you have Markieff and Anthony that are the front court that won us the title, or something along those lines. And that to me was like, okay, that is an interesting admission into how he views the Lakers' success last year, is that he sees it as it was AD and Markieff in that front court that really kind of, you know, gave them the boost that they needed to get over the finish line and whatever. And so that makes me think that Markieff, you know, I don't know how significant his role will be in the regular season. Again, like, they're going to manage all of these veterans to some degree with rest and all that stuff. But I do think that, look, like, Frank obviously views him incredibly highly. To admit that, even when you're praising everyone, it hits a little different when you say that's the front court that won us the title. And that is an interesting view into how he views basketball, as well as, like, why the Lakers may have been comfortable letting Dwight and JaVale go this offseason, because they feel like they got the guy that is the most important partner for AD when it matters.
Yeah, it seems like Frank Vogel can best come up with a scheme to get the most out of these players. And I with the loss of rim protection that they did take, I think you're going to see a team really similar to like LeBron's Miami years, a team that plays passing lanes, is really fast on defense, a team that Frank Vogel is really familiar coaching against. And so I think that's what you're going to end up seeing.
I think that's a fair take. And I think for Markieff, I mean, to bring Markieff back on the minimum was just a luxury that I don't think some Lakers fans were expecting. I know I was personally hopeful of it, but I'm very glad that he's back as well. I think the Lakers have kept enough of their identity from last season. Of course, anytime you have LeBron and AD under lock and key long term, you're going to have that identity in place. But I think they've kept enough of the complementary parts in place where they're going to have some continuity and a level of comfort going into training camp and starting practicing today. but have brought in enough new guys where they're going to be forced to switch it up and really force, you know, both themselves and opponents to have to adjust in the process. It would not surprise me as sort of we look to, you know, wrap up this quick preview, because before you know it, the games are going to start, at least the preseason. It would not surprise me.
That's still wild, by the way. I still that is not fully computed for me yet. Like literally like 5 days from now, I'm going to be covering a preseason game. We're going to be watching a Laker game. Like I, even though it's preseason, I just can't believe it. It just it has not even fully hit.
It feels like it should be summer league in December, I guess.
Right? I know, right? Like this is so like my entire body calendar, as if 2020 and staying in the house all the time was not enough. Like now the basketball, I can't even rely to tell me what time of year it is. Like this is, you know, it's destroying all of our body clocks.
It really is a complete mess. So as we look at this team, it would not surprise me if they got off to a slow start, in part by design, because, you know, you don't know what load LeBron and or AD might play, especially early in the year, but also because they are going to have to figure out some of the kinks along the way just because of the expedited timeline. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's sort of a league-wide trend, right? Like if the Hornets jump out and you all of a sudden the Hornets are the four seed after 10 games and people are raising their eyebrows. But by, you know, 25, 30 games in, we have a regression to the mean, shall we say. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the Lakers fall under that designation, especially because of how much other teams are going to want to beat the Lakers in the regular season after winning the title. Do you feel like the Lakers are going to be prone to that, or do you think they're going to make it a point to sort of come in as locked in as possible and really, you know, say, hey, look, we're not complacent. We're still here to play.
So everything in LeBron's past would make you think that they are just not going to care at all during this regular season, and that's going to come from the top down. Like, look, like, you know, I know LeBron stans are going to get mad at me for acknowledging that he is not like a – and to some degree, this isn't even a fault or a flaw. Like, this is like – him realizing what he needs to do to get his body ready for the postseason and like hitting the gears when he and doing gear shifts when he needs to do them. No one knows that better than him. So this is not a criticism, but like, you know, his years during Cleveland, you know, he didn't really care about the regular season. And that was pretty obvious, especially did not care about defense. That was different last year, I think, both because he had something to prove and because he had AD to hold him accountable on that end. But I just like, I wonder, you know, despite all their talk of we're going to take every game seriously, I think that, like, to some degree, that has to come from the top down. So I'm very curious to see how he and AD, you know, kind of share that load of motivating the rest of the team and, you know, like, having that approach go down. And I think that LeBron, you know, I'm going to be interested to see if he can both take a step into the background while the Lakers don't lose any intensity, perhaps because of AD, you know, gunning for MVP and really pushing the whole team and, you know, setting that mentality. It's going to be an interesting thing to watch for. I honestly can't predict it. I know you asked me to predict. I really don't know, and I'm very curious to see.
JC, you're a betting man. If I told you the over under for the Lakers first 15 games was 11.5 wins, would you be taking the over or the under?
11.5. I might take the under on that.
You take the under on that?
I mean, 11.5 out of 15. So I mean, to I guess go 10. Yeah, 10-5. I mean, that sounds about
right. Yeah, that sounds about right to me.
There's a lot of uncertainty, I think, out in the West. You know, you don't know who's really, you don't know where Golden State really is going to be without the loss of Klay Thompson. Houston, it remains to be seen what's going to go on there. I think the uncertainty has the Lakers at an advantage. I think they are going to start out slow.
And look, we know Lakers fans keep receipts. So if we're wrong, like this is going to get clipped and like, you know, like Pickup Hoop's going to tweet it out and like Lakers bloggers exposed for their hating on the team and like this team's 14-1.
How much of that do you deal with as somebody who covers the Lakers in, day out, whether it's Lakers fans who, you know, are overly optimistic about literally everything and or fans of other teams who can't, quote unquote, stand the reporting because it's such in favor of the Lakers this offseason. Do you experience that in your role at all? I'm just curious.
Yes, a lot. So that is, I mean, you mentioned my, I mean, first of all, I just want to say like, that was not a shot at Pickup Hoop. I love his receipts videos probably more than anyone. Like I've literally sent him clips. I'm like, here, just put this in the files. And so like, you know, I love the work that he does. And he is like an anonymous internet hero to me. Like, I think it's hilarious. And, like, I look, all of us, like, who give takes should be held accountable for those takes. People need to know who they can trust to be right and wrong. And, look, everybody gets some wrong, but you also have to be willing to acknowledge that. You can't, like, if you get picked up in a receipts video, be like, oh, well, you know, like, Lakers fans are overreacting and da-da-da-da. Like, you know, no, like, that's what fans do. And I
defended the Timofey Mozgov signing, so, you know.
That's... Look, so did I. Look, that's probably one of my takes that aged the worst. Like, I think I said this contract might not be that bad. Like,
there's so much uncertainty. Like, over at my bookie, where if you use the promo code HoopBall, you'll get your first deposit matched. There actually aren't any full season odds yet. Like, you can currently bet on who the champion will be, the conference champion, division, NBA season MVP, or an rookie.
Even the odds
makers
are like, we have no idea. I love that.
Yeah, odds makers have no idea, but over at mybookie.com, you can use the promo code HoopBall, and they will match your first deposit, and they also do things like odds boost weekends. I actually had a really profitable Thanksgiving holiday weekend due to their 15 different odds boosts, one of which was the Lakers winning the championship at plus 600, so a little bit of an odds boost there. Over at mybookie.com, you use mybookie.ag, you use promo code HoopBall, and they will match your first deposit.
What a great plug, JC. That's
yeah,
the
way
to do
it. Yeah, that was the most... honestly, I gotta say, I've been on a lot of podcasts. I've done ad reads. That was the most seamless ad read transition I have ever heard. Like, that was incredible. They should send that around to their other podcasters. Like, this is how you work it. That was beautiful.
Wow, well done, JC. You're committing to that excellence already. Okay, so JC's taking the under on 11.5 out of the first 15. Harrison?
Yeah, I will also take the under on that. Yeah. Like,
take the under.
And look,
yeah,
throw it back in my face. And, you know, to answer your question just from before, like, I do get that sometimes. Like, I get it from fans of opposing teams when I troll the Celtics. I get it from Lakers fans when I'm not positive enough. Like, look, like, I get, but my job is not to make people happy. My job is to, like, you know, react to things and say things as I see it. And am I going to be right all the time? No. But, like, I also accept when I'm wrong. And, like, look, like, if you want to old receipts me, like, you know, I've been subject to that too. And I get it. And, you know, my mentions are a trash fire sometimes when you have, like, once you pass, like, for me, I think it was, like, once I passed 8,000 followers, it started to get, like, you know, sometimes you get annoying tweets, like, other people start to find your tweets, fans of opposing teams. Once I passed 30,000, like, that was when it was, like, okay, you have eggs in your mentions all the time telling you, you know, like, that you're an idiot, and, like, how could you believe it? Like, arguing with, like, you could say anything. You could be, like, the sky's blue today, but it's like, they're like, well, the sun's setting where I am, so once again, fake news, like. You know, yeah. I get it. It comes with the territory, and I would say 90% of Lakers fans, 95% are amazing, and they're like 5% that are like war criminals.
Yeah, keyboard soldiers. I would say I've lost a follower or two over the recent political landscape, but you know, not lamenting
me
anything.
Too, me
there,
too.
But, you know, it happens. All for the best, in my opinion. As the Lakers, I think I will also take the under just because there is going to be a lot of uncertainty. I'm not sure how much the main guys are going to play. And I think the Western Conference will be a battlefield. On that note, I feel like how we should end it is, and this is a tough question because I know there's so much uncertainty. I'm asking you guys to project a lot ahead. The Western Conference is obviously stacked. We all know that not every team can make the playoffs. What pseudo or quote-unquote contender, at least a playoff contender, is not going to find their way in?
I got to pick the Rockets. Like, I really just hate the vibes coming out of that team. And, like, everyone can say, oh, they're going to keep Harden. They're going to whatever. Like, you know, he didn't show up for the first day of training camp because he was partying in Vegas. Like, you know, during a pandemic. Like, I just, you know, that is not... I really think the Rockets are going to fall out. I'm very confident that is going to be a trash fire this year. And, like, maybe I will be wrong.
Yeah, 100% I mean, agree. I think one of the funniest things to me year after year is how much faith ESPN constantly has in the Houston Rockets and how they're going to do in the upcoming season. They constantly overrate them and think they're going to do way better than they end up doing.
And some of that is like, look, like the numbers from last year are the numbers from last year. So like that can, like that, those numbers don't understand that James Harden is not going to care. You know what I mean? Like they can't factor that into their numerical projections. And so I think that the expert takes will probably have them a little lower than like the numbers do. But like, you know, I just don't see that team like coming out on fire and like galvanizing, like, you know, like Kobe after he demanded his trade. Like, I think that by the trade deadline, we're going to be getting serious whispers about a Harden trade. And like that whole thing is going to be a disaster. I'm convinced, and maybe I'll be wrong.
Yeah, it does not exactly project like, they were warm good, and fuzzy
they
got right
to get
now.
Kicked out of the bubble because he, like, you know, couldn't hold out for a couple more days for, like, family, you know? Like, I just don't think that, like, I just don't think that they have a winning culture already. And, like, I think now that Harden wants out, that's only going to get worse.
And I think they're asking an impossible task of Steven Silas in his first year as head
coach.
Yeah,
I feel so bad for that dude. He seems like, by all accounts, like one of the all-time, like, nice assistant, like, qualified assistant coaches. And now this is going to be, like, a dark mark on his name, and that just sucks. I feel bad for him.
It is going to be extraordinarily tough. Okay, I'm in on that Rockets pick. I think things are going to go sideways. Last question before we get out of here. Do the Pelicans make the playoffs?
No, I do not think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
No?
The West is just too stacked. Like, looking at the teams and seeing where they could be, like, I could see how New Orleans could improve, but I don't see it yet.
I just want them to miss it, to be honest. Like, I mean, I think they will, but I just want them to, just, like, to see, you know, Pelicans fans have to justify that again and how they still won the Anthony Davis trade.
So sorry for the baby Lakers, but it looks like you might be on the outside looking in, especially if you're going to start both Bledsoe and Lonzo with Steven Adams now down low as well. I wonder about the spacing on that team. That was a concern with the baby Lakers. With the Lakers, continues to be a concern for the Pelicans.
You know what fake trade I really want to see that just came to mind, like, for me? Like, and, you know, they'd have to make it work cap-wise so there would be other guys in this deal or whatever. Like, I want to see Kuz for Lonzo. Like, I want to see the Pelicans be like, all right, we want, like, the other guy that you held out of the trade. And the Lakers are like, all right, we actually want Lonzo back to help with our, you know, like, defensive identity and, like, ball handling creativity, whatever. Like, I would love – and, you know, Lonzo's clutch guy now. You know, I don't want to start too much speculation or whatever. But, you know, that is a guy that I have my eye on as a potential former Laker or whatever, you know, however that would work out.
And yeah, I actually thought him and LeBron played pretty well together in their limited
time. I love their pairing. I'm disappointed that we didn't get to see, like, you know, the Lonzo like renaissance fully take place in LA.
Well, you never know what the future holds, and that's the best part of podcasting, right? We can ruminate, and sometimes when we ruminate, we project forward and we manifest things. Harrison, you were so gracious to give us so much of your time today. We appreciate you. As a reminder, you can follow Harrison on Twitter at HMFagen, FAIGEN. He is the Lakers beat writer, the editor-in-chief, the God Almighty himself for Lakers SB Nation, Silver Screen and Roll. Hey, man, I'm just out here in the business of giving people nicknames, you know, in the appropriate context. So in terms of having you on, we really appreciate your time, man. It was a lot of fun, and we hope to do it again in the near future.
Yeah, look, I appreciate the nicknames and all the love. I'm just trying to not have lightning strike me at the end of a podcast, you know, although that would be, like, great for your guys, like, listenership. You'd be like, listen to Harrison Fagan's last moments as he struck down for blasphemy.
Wow, I feel like we do you a little bit better than that, but it probably would be our most listened to episode of all time.
That would be hilarious. Like if I, that's a, like, look, he died as he lived podcasting.
Hey, man, you know, that's if you're going to go doing something that you enjoy, right? that's the way to do it. All right, guys, on the Hoop Ball Lakers show, you can find us anywhere where you get your streaming pods at. Of course, follow us on Twitter at Hoop Ball Lakers for all the latest news, updates, insights, retweets, episodes, and all of that good stuff. You can follow JC on Twitter at JCDeLeon1. You can follow me on Twitter at Ethan_Noroff. And until next time. We out. Cool. Harrison, appreciate it, man.
Thanks, guys. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, man.
Thanks
nice
for giving
you.
Us so much of your time. Really nice to connect and do that. Look forward to doing it again, man.
Yeah, for sure. Anytime, guys.
All right, brother. Have a good rest of your day. Thanks again.
All right, you too.
All right, take care.
All right, bye.
JC, good stuff, man. Excellent read. Loved it.
Sweet, thanks.
All right, I'll send over a show description. We'll do the usual thing.
All right, cool.
All right, brother.
See ya.
Later.
This has been a Hoop Ball presentation.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator.
Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.